Please join me in prayer. Lord, open our hearts and minds by the power of your Holy Spirit, that as the scriptures are read and your word is proclaimed, we may hear with joy what you want to say to us today. Amen. So, good morning. My name is Lindsay Cribbs, and my parents are Carol and Ash Cribbs, and my sister is Isabel. I'm a senior at AC Flora High School, and I'm going to Furman next year. And I have the opportunity to share a little bit of my journey to faith with y'all. So if you know any of us seniors that are up here, you know that we have been waiting for this moment for so long because we would have the best Youth Sunday ever, and we are finally on top of the Youth Sunday pyramid. I grew up in this church and have always had great relationships with the people that go here, but something was different. Back then, I didn't have a deep understanding of who God was and what it meant to be Christian. If you had asked me what I thought the Bible was 4 years ago, I would have just said it's a book with just a bunch of rules that taught us how to live. In my personal life, I would seek attention and acceptance in others, seeking love from my friends, boys, and hoping to gain popularity. I definitely experienced real love from my family, but I was always searching for something more. There was always something deeper inside of me that felt missing. Oftentimes, I felt as if I was just going through the motions and on the outside looked fine, but inside I felt lost. I started going to Young Life and church more, but the only reason I went was because of the social aspect of it. When I went to Young Life my freshman year, I saw something different in the people there. The leaders and the older girls sought me out and accepted me where I was. I never experienced something like this, but all I knew was that something was different about them. That week is when it clicked for me that the thing that was different about them was that they had a personal relationship with Jesus, and that I decided I wanted to live that out too. I realized that I was fully loved by God and that I didn't need to seek acceptance from friends or people who I thought were cooler. When I got back, I started to actively seek God more and seeing him more in others also. I started reading my Bible more and spending more time with the people who encouraged me to grow in my relationship with God. I started growing in my relationships with the people at church in a deeper way and growing in my faith through that. One verse that reminded me of how I felt at camp is, "For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things to come, nor things present, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any created thing will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Jesus Christ our Lord." Romans 8:38-39. This verse has always been important to me because no matter where I try to search for love, I am always reminded that nothing can separate us from his great love. I was continuously pursued by people I met at camp, and they encouraged me to strengthen my relationship with God. I went to Montreat Youth Conference all throughout high school, where I met some amazing people that have showed me a group without judgment within my church, people who I met at small group and around the conference. Throughout my years at Montreat, I was able to form deeper connections with the people in my church and the volunteers who came with us, from Margaret teaching us how to bake cookies and wash clothes to us having late-night talks with other FLY members. These moments have showed me how God works in the most simplest ways. My junior year, God gave me the heart and vision to reach out to the younger girls at AC Flora, just like the older girls did for me at camp. I wanted to be a role model and help them navigate the challenges of high school and help them consider who Jesus was to them. Throughout that, I was able to create some amazing relationships with the girls, even within our very own youth group. Shout out to Lainey. I am so grateful for the friendships that I have decided that I have developed with those girls and that God has allowed me to play a small role in their walk with Christ. This past summer, I was given the opportunity to do work crew at Carolina Point in Brevard, North Carolina for a month. I worked in the laundry room with a couple other girls and probably folded over 5,000 sheets along with everyone's clothes and underwear. It showed me how intentional everything is and how everything I did at camp was for the purpose of showing God's great love. That month brought so many beautiful friendships that ultimately strengthened my faith and showed me a true community with Christ at the center. It showed me how true Jesus is, that he has allowed me to form so many wonderful relationships. Even some of those have traveled to Columbia to come and see me do this sermon today. Throughout this journey to faith, I have realized that God's great love is able to satisfy me and I am fully accepted and loved. Another verse that reminds me of that we can achieve life to the fullest in Christ is through this prayer. This is my prayer for you, that your love will grow more and more, that you will have knowledge and understanding with your love, that you will see the difference between good and bad and choose the good, that you will be pure and without wrong for the coming of Christ and will be filled with the good things produced in your life by Christ to bring glory and praise to God. Philippians 1, 9 through 11. Thank y'all for listening.
Hi, my name is Rose Beecham, and I'm a senior at Richland Northeast High School. My parents are Jan and David Beecham, and my sister is Grace Beecham. I've always grown up in a Christian family who went to church on most Sundays. I spent countless hours going to youth groups, church retreats, and other church events. While I absolutely loved being able to attend these events and spend time with people who are now some of my best friends, I still never felt like I had a strong relationship with God. I understood who God was, and I listened to many people tell stories of how a relationship with Christ made them feel. I always actively listened to these stories, but I was never really able to relate. I thought that maybe I just had to wait for some big life-changing event, and maybe then I would feel God's presence. However, this was always something that made me extremely nervous, mainly because I was paralyzed by the fear instilled in me by the idea of heaven and hell. Everything felt extremely overwhelming and frightening. As I grew older, I kind of just forgot about it. I began mindlessly going to church, going to Sunday night fly, retreats, and conferences. I was always there, but I was never really there. By this time, I knew that something was missing in my life. However, I was never able to put my finger on what it was or how I would find it. By the time I got to high school, I felt completely lost. I tried to fill this void in my heart by getting the best grades possible, being involved in as many clubs and organizations as possible, excelling in my sports, and overall being the best student, athlete, and daughter that I felt I could be. This became an overwhelmingly exhausting cycle of never feeling like I was enough. I began to lose touch with the fact that my hard work shouldn't be solely for the purpose of impressing others. By doing this, I stopped caring in a way. The only reason I worked towards goals was to make those around me proud. I was constantly seeking validation from others, however, I still never felt complete. In doing this, I began to feel more empty than ever. I constantly found myself asking, am I not enough? What am I doing wrong? And what am I missing? It was around this time that I began going to Young Life. Young Life is a Christian organization, mainly directed at youth, that is held in many different countries around the world. I began going occasionally throughout my freshman year, and then more often during my sophomore year, and I also began to invite more people to come. Despite the fact that I absolutely fell in love with Young Life and the idea of it, I still struggled to find this life-changing relationship with God that all my friends were always talking about. Not only did they vocalize their relationship with Christ, but it was reflected in the way that they lived their everyday lives. This is when I realized that that was what I wanted. I wanted to feel so loved by God that I could treat everyone around me with that same love and acceptance. It took me a while, but I eventually realized that the only way I could do this was to begin building my own personal relationship with God. Of course, I already had a foundation provided to me by my friends, family, and the church, but I knew that it would take something more than that. The summer before my junior year, I went to Windy Gap, a Young Life summer camp. I went just expecting to have some fun with my friends and maybe hear a few scriptures here and there, but I got so much more than that. I listened very intently to our camp speaker, Rick, who did an amazing job at sharing the story of God with us in a way that wasn't intimidating. On the third night, I completely broke down because I realized what I was missing. I opened up to the girls in my cabin, which was really hard, and I finally faced my own truth, that I didn't truly have a relationship with God. This was extremely hard for me because I was scared. That night, I had a long talk with my amazing Young Life leader, Rebecca, and she assured me that my doubts and questions were all right and they didn't make me any less of a person. I finally realized that what I needed was a relationship, not just a religion. On the last night of camp, I proclaimed that I was ready to begin my relationship with Christ, and I felt a giant weight be lifted off my shoulders. Going home, I was ready to strengthen and further this new relationship. The first step that I took was devoting more of my time to building my relationship with Christ. I began going to various Bible studies and taking time every day to talk to God and strengthen my faith. One place where I was especially able to do this was at the Montreat Youth Conference. I've been twice, and I'm planning to go again this summer. This conference gave me the amazing opportunity to grow even closer to my FLPC family. Amazing friends like Lindsay and Katie, who I can hang with for hours and never run out of things to talk about, and wonderful adult advisors like Margaret, who gave up her own free time to come and take such great care of us. The next thing that I had to start working on was feeling comfortable talking to my friends and family about God and Christianity. For some reason, my own faith was never really something that I wanted to talk to others about, mainly because I was ashamed of my own perceived shortcomings when it came to being a follower of Christ. This was definitely a big hump that I had to get over, but having such supportive friends and advisors made it way easier. Lastly, and the biggest step in my journey to faith, was realizing that our God is a loving God. Many people may turn words in the Bible into justifications for their own hatred and judgments. I wondered if religion was simply just a tool that people use to avoid accountability for their own actions by condemning others for things that they couldn't change about themselves. As I really started to listen to the sermons of Pastor Ellen and pay attention to the way that she carries herself and interacts with the people in our congregation, I began to see how the Bible could be and should be used to show unconditional love and acceptance. John 3:17 reads, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. I no longer feel fearful of God, but welcome, safe, and most importantly, I'm assured that I'm enough. I cannot thank Young Life, my friends, my family, and lastly, my wonderful FLPC community enough for helping me to begin this beautiful journey with God. It wasn't until I acknowledged that something was missing that I was able to find it. Not only did I find God, though, I found myself within him, which is arguably the best feeling in the world. I hope that everyone has the opportunity to experience this amazing and unconditional love because everyone has a seat at his table."
Good morning. God writes the gospel not in the Bible alone, but also on trees and in the flowers and clouds and stars. Good morning. My name is Lily Scheidel, and my parents are Courtney and Eric Scheidel. My brother, Philip Richardson, is sitting in the back of the sanctuary right now. I am a senior at Spring Valley High School, planning to attend a college next year. Not exactly sure which one yet. And I've been a member of Forest Lake along with my family since I was in the second grade. I've always thought of myself as one of the smartest people in the room, whether that was true or not. Because I was so concerned with being smart, I looked up to other undeniably intelligent people to tell me how to live my life. One of the common themes that emerged is that smart people don't believe in God. Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Hawking, two of my favorites, have rejected religion, citing science, physics, and mathematics to defend their stance. So, I rejected God as well. I turned away from the church, mortified to follow an old white man in the sky that I could not see. Then I took AP Biology. This seems like a strange segue, and I don't know who needs to hear this today, but science and religion are not mutually exclusive. If anything, they work together in the most beautiful ways that I can ever possibly imagine. In my class, I learned about genes, heredity, and cellular interactions. Did you know that plant cells communicate with one another just like humans, primates, butterflies, and even starfish? How could our world have evolved so perfectly? I came to the conclusion that there must be some guiding force, an energy that oversaw change over time, that oversaw everything. I searched for answers in Buddhism, science, guessing, and even crystal magic. But then I realized that maybe the answer was what I had known since I was a little kid. Somehow, in some strange way, there was something responsible for all of this. The probability of each person sitting here today being alive is approximately 2.5 times 10 to the negative 16%. For those of you who have not taken statistics or just a math class in general in a little while, that's a really small number, like really, really small. The chance of each person being here alive today is about zero. Everybody here today is a statistical improbability, a mathematical anomaly, and an intellectual oddity. But I'm looking at you right now. I realize that people who are smart are not always atheists. Albert Einstein, and a personal favorite of all the Presbyterians that I've ever known, C.S. Lewis, remained strong in their faith as scientists, authors, and most importantly, religious figures. God is not what I thought they were. God is something that we cannot understand, and maybe that's okay. People around the world have waged wars over the interpretation of an uninterpretable issue. God is not a man or a woman. God is not gay or straight, black or white. They are everything, and a piece of them is inside of each and every one of us. People like to pick and choose what God would condemn and what they would celebrate. Sometimes the people who hold signs promoting hatred, pretending to be the voice of God, commit adultery, block immigrants from entering their country, or judge others from being different. They vote for leaders that stand on a platform of hate, but make up for it by pretending to worship the God of love. The people who think that they know all of the answers are wrong. I am not arrogant to believe that I, at 18 years old, have all the answers, and I hope that no one in the audience here today is either. My grandmother, one of my favorite people in the world, is a devout Christian. She believes in the literal interpretation of the Bible, meaning that she believes in creationism and the idea that God saved the world by putting every animal on the ark. My other friend, who is also a devout Christian, believes that the stories of the Bible are only stories, told to help us understand the ways of God. And maybe both are right, and maybe both are wrong, and at the end of the day, it just doesn't matter. I rejected God because I didn't like the idea of not understanding something. But I have learned that there are some things that I will never understand, and that's okay. I know that there are some people sitting here today that think that the church is silly. It's only a way for people to feel better about themselves. Some people think that they may be too smart to believe in God, that they cannot follow something that they cannot see, and that's okay. It took me a really long time as well. But when you admit to the things you cannot know, and quite possibly will never know, there is peace. The true wise person knows that if they had a God they could understand, they would never hold that person to be a God. 1 Corinthians 18:14 says, "Let all that you do be done in love." Let us remember this verse and use it in everything we do, everything we say, and everything we give to others. Thank you.
Hello. Okay. I'd like to start with a verse. Isaiah 38:16-17. "Lord, by such things people live, and my spirit finds life in them too. You restored me to health and let me live. Surely it was for my benefit that I suffered such anguish. In your love, you kept me from the pit of destruction. You have put all my sins behind your back." So now before I begin, I want to start with a quote. "I had to see darkness to experience it and to appreciate the light of life." Tacked in the middle of a kitchen wall in a small house in Tallahassee, Florida, a sign reads, "Si se puede," yes you can. To most, this is nothing more than a simple phrase, but to me, it was the mantra for the hardest part of my life. Now allow me to give some backstory and explain. Good morning. For those who don't know me, I'm Katie Pittman, eldest daughter of Kathy and David Pittman, granddaughter of Catherine and Joe Hall, and oldest sister to Ellie. She got mad because I forgot to say that in the first service. I'm a senior at Spring Valley High School, and I'm looking forward to graduating and attending Queen's University of Charlotte in the fall. I've been a part of the Forest Lake family for a majority of my life, through the Michaels and Daniels, Carters and Chandlers, and now Bill. I've been here for it all. All this time, I have waited for this moment to stand here and preach, all eyes on me, and now that I'm standing here, it is a lot harder than expected. When your soul's weary, when you find doubt, when you can't hear me, lay your troubles down. Personally, I think that a faith journey cannot begin until you are consciously aware of all that comes with it. Two different things, Forest Lake Presbyterian Church and Young Life, played major parts in my faith journey. Forest Lake has always been a favorite place of mine, and since I joined FLY in the sixth grade, I have been participating in many different things with the youth. Some of my favorite FLY memories come from our yearly summer trip to High School Montreat Youth Conference, and Montreat is a safe place for me because whenever I'm there, I can feel God in action. But Montreat is an experience that only lasts for so long, and once you get back home, shouldn't that feeling of God follow you? Truthfully, I probably did not understand what it meant when I stood in front of session after confirmation and claimed that the Holy Spirit was pollen and I would become a diligent honeybee to spread the wealth to all the growing flowers. And yes, that was the actual metaphor that I used. Admittedly, I did have some doubts at times, but I did my best to wake up in time for the 9 o'clock service. I went to Young Life twice a week with my older cousin Ford, and I was always at FLY on Sunday evenings. But sophomore year is when things came to a head. After a hard breakup between a lousy boy and my close friend group, I lost sight of myself. Throughout the months of November and December 2017, I slowly succumbed to the dangerous world of an eating disorder. By the time winter break had ended, I had lost an extreme amount of weight to the point where I was given the ultimatum by a therapist I had started to see: make distinct progress over the next 2 weeks or you're going to Greenville for treatment. This was really hard to hear the first day back to school. But what was even harder was getting a call less than 24 hours later saying that 2 weeks was too much time and I would be starting the following Monday. I went to school Friday, January 8th, and started Eating Recovery Center Monday, Friday, January 5th. Goodness. I've told the story of my experiences in Greenville countless times, but each time is just as important as the last. Throughout the 3 months I stayed in Greenville, I learned that I was struggling with not only a lesser-known eating disorder called ARFID, but also that I had severe anxiety that I had never paid much attention to until this disorder latched on and took control. As I fell into the darkness that comes with mental illness, I struggled to remain myself. If you were a fly on the wall at this time, you would see that I simply wasn't the same person anymore. I lost interest in my hobbies. I couldn't talk to my friends back home for very long because I would physically get sick with anxiety over everything I was missing out on. And I had lost all faith that I had, because how could I believe in God if I couldn't believe in myself? In your dark moments, when your heart's weak, bring yourself broken, you will find me. On a gloomy day in March, my parents and the recovery team sat down and had a long talk about what was going to happen next. I had become unresponsive to the treatment I was receiving, and insurance would no longer support me. My two options were go home and wish for the best, or enter residential treatment far from home and family until I was stable again. While it was obvious that I couldn't go home in the condition I was in, it was still an incredibly hard decision to make. In the end, my parents found an adolescent eating disorder recovery center in Tallahassee, Florida, that was Christian-based and specifically focused on art, music, and equine therapy. I packed up my life into a bag, said goodbye to my friends and family, and drove with my mom down to Florida. Before checking into Canopy Cove, I spent 4 days at a small beach peninsula called Alligator Point with my mom, one of her best friends from college who lived in Tallahassee, her niece, and their three dogs. Those 4 days felt like the longest and shortest days of my life. I read 3 books from cover to cover, sat on the dock and watched the ocean, and played with the dogs, waiting for Monday to arrive. Once it did, I said goodbye to my mom and walked into my new home. Canopy Cove was everything that ERC was not. The weather was sunny and warm every day. The therapy groups took a different approach to facing your own struggles, and I started to take interest in my old hobbies again. For the first time since January, I made art that wasn't structured by an assignment. I played my guitar and wrote songs about what I was going through, and I genuinely laughed with the girls I was living with. Something that Canopy Cove had that was very special to me was a wall of affirmations. Before every meal or snack, we would go around the table and read an affirmation to calm nerves, inspire, or just be reminded of its message. Si Se Puede was a favorite among the girls, and at least one person would say it before every meal. Before I left, the affirmation wall was taken down so the room could be repainted. The other girls and I were able to take our favorite ones home, and I still have a few of my favorites hanging on the wall in my room. When your faith's broken, when you can't see, with my arms open, you will find me. Canopy Cove was a Christian-based recovery method, which meant that we would do daily devotionals in the morning and go to church every Sunday. While I was at Canopy Cove, we celebrated Easter. I had never celebrated any holiday without my family, and it was really strange to go to a church that wasn't my own for such an important Sunday out of the year. The church we went to was a Methodist church, and we would go to the 11 o'clock contemporary service. It was normal for the girls to bring a book or notebook to read or write in, and not everyone had a particular interest in the service. When I first started going, I took my book and would read the entire time, only looking up from its pages during songs and when I was supposed to stand. Did I feel a little guilty doing this? Yes. It didn't escape me that I wasn't even trying to pretend that I believed anymore. But, without even realizing it at first, each time we went to church, I would read my book less and listen to the preacher more. Eventually, I stopped taking my book altogether and instead took a journal, to take notes on my favorite parts of the sermon. I was slowly understanding it again, the feeling I had had at Montreat, the feeling that it wasn't all pointless. I was getting something out of just being in that congregation. With every song, every sermon, on every Sunday, I looked forward to putting on my nicest shirt and sitting in our pew to hear the message I needed. I'm going to be there near or far. I'm going to meet you where you are. Standing here in the Presbyterian church that I've grown up in, I am grateful that this congregation didn't forget about me when I wasn't around. Forest Lake refused to let me put its people at my back as I gave up on myself. While in Greenville and Tallahassee, I received countless notes and letters from this church and people who are sitting in these pews even now. Without their thoughtfulness and use of snail mail, my days were brightened when I was given an envelope. My personal darkness started to fade until it was a slight haze around me. These are just some of the letters that I received, each one filled with prayers and reminders that I am loved and never forgotten. I remember mail time in Florida was always a highlight because no matter what, I always had a letter to open every single day. And I'd like to take this moment to sincerely thank everyone who sent me a letter. And as you can see, I've kept every single one. My time in Tallahassee came to an end on May 1st, 2018, which coincidentally enough was National Eating Recovery Day. I said goodbye to the girls I had met, the therapists who had helped me, and the staff that stayed by me night and day to keep me through this darkness. My mom and I loaded my life into the car and drove home, where I was reunited with my dad and sister for the first time in over a month. While coming home was something I had looked forward to for so long, it wasn't an easy transition. I had changed inside and out, but my home and community was exactly the same as I had left it. I had to adapt yet again to make sure that I didn't backslide because my surroundings were the same ones I had escaped from months before. When the world felt like it was caving in again, I turned to my family for guidance and was able to see the light rather than fall back into darkness. Returning to the question of what is a faith journey, I feel like the best answer is something that I learned that applies to recovery as well as one's faith. Recovery is not linear, and a person's faith journey is not linear. While I was in Greenville, this idea was first introduced to me while I was having a particularly hard day. My therapist told me that recovery is not linear. There will be good days, and there will be bad days, but all days are important to the process. With my own faith, there are days when I can feel God's presence and know that I'm on the right path. But there are also days where I step back into my doubt and denial because I am only human. But both of these days are crucial to my overall journey. I am not what I have done. I am what I have overcome. I stand here today telling you my story, and I am not ashamed of what happened to me. To quote a famous line by Victor Hugo, even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise. My dark night has faded away. I'm left in the light of day, and I'm overjoyed with how I've grown not only as an individual, but as an example of not letting my mental illness get the best of me. It's said in John 1, verse 4, in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I overcame darkness with the help of friends, family, and my return to Christ. And ever since, that darkness has not overcome. Thank you.